Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The West sanctions on Russia are distorting and damaging the global economy. Consumers all over the world are experiencing higher prices and shortages. At the same time, most of the global South has little interest in the West campaign against Russia, and in the long run may benefit from a world economy in transition. Crosstalking Russia and the Global South, I'm joined by my guest, Aydar Tangen in Beijing. He's a senior fellow of the Taihe Institute. In New Delhi, we have Professor Chen Noi. She is professor emeritus at the School of International Studies at Nehru University. And in Bristol, we cross to Jyoti Barra. She is the deputy leader of the Workers' Party of Britain and author of The Drive to War Against Russia and China. All right, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Let's go to the professor in New Delhi first. You get a lot of... We had the G7 meeting, and it's all Western, all over Western media, talking about the great decisions the leaders are making. But in the Global South, you folks don't take much notice anymore. Why?
Correct. Because you can see the parallel. There have been two international meetings, one of the BRICS and one of G7. And you see the difference in the narrative. G7 was all about, you know, kind of militarism, sanctions, targeting others, exclusions, whereas BRICS was all about global development, cooperation, financial linkages, open.
In Beijing, Aydar, how do you see that? Because, you know, when we had the BRICS meeting here, just as we heard from the professor in New Delhi, they're looking for ways of cooperation. And I would also say this is a really remarkable moment of pivoting to a multipolar world, because the West is drawing lines on who it's not going to cooperate and who will it punish. But at the BRICS meeting, we had Argentina and Iran asking to become members in an organization where Russia is, that the West is isolating.
Correct. Not only Argentina.
What we have here is, as you put it quite succinctly, a sea change in what is happening in the world. I mean, it's pushing from a unipolar to a multipolar world. And quite frankly, the Global South has nothing. I should just say Global South, but Global South and East Asia have no reason to think that the established powers, the developed powers, Europe and America especially, have their good wishes at heart, given the history of colonialism and what has happened there. It's just, at this point, they've just said, listen, America and Europe pushed Russia into a situation where they would retaliate. And it's not a concern of Africa, South America, Asia, or no. If they see this as manipulation, a great powers contest, but it's hurting them. They're the ones who are going to suffer the most from higher food prices, the most from higher energy prices. They're already reeling from the lack of interest in providing vaccines to them during COVID. I mean, for some reason, the U.S. can find almost $50 billion single-handedly to support, supposedly, Ukraine. But they couldn't find $50 billion or even contribute much to a global vaccine system that would have, in essence, inoculated the entire world, including the Global South and East Asia.
Jyoti, in Bristol, what is really kind of remarkable here is that we just had the G7, which, of course, like I said, that gets all kind of fanfare in the West, and they are adamant in denying that they have anything to do with the increasing food insecurity around the world. Well, of course, it's their sanctions that are doing it, and they don't want to admit to it. And when you look at the Global South, which actually is a consumer of a lot of grain that comes from Russia and Ukraine, they see this obviously as a deflection for a huge problem that the West has created, not only for itself, for a good part of the world. Go ahead.
Absolutely. I mean, if you look at the sanctions war against Russia, it is a classic case of a powerful man lifting a heavy rock to drop on his own feet. You know, the West went into this war believing that it could crush the Russian economy like that with a total trade and sanctions war. And it was so sure that that strategy was going to succeed, it didn't really bother to think very hard about its military strategy, right? It didn't think it needed to have one. But the sanctions failed. And not only did they fail, they've actually achieved the precise opposite. You know, Russia's economy had already been substantially diversified and restored in response to kind of earlier rounds of sanctions. Payment and trading mechanisms have been being quietly developed by Russia and by China for quite some time because they saw the way the wind was blowing. You know, the West has constantly used its economic and technological stranglehold on the world to force people into submission. And Russia and China increasingly, on behalf really of the whole of the developing world, have been standing up and saying no. And that's why we see their friendship and cooperation deepening and developing. And Russia has showed the West, you know, and the world, that there are other ways to conduct international trade outside of the SWIFT system now. There are other markets for its goods outside Europe and America. Instead of Russian society collapsing into poverty and hunger, it's actually the EU's people who are facing a winter of hunger and blackouts. And the people in the rest of the world are taking careful notice of these lessons.
Let's go back to New Delhi. Professor, one of the interesting things, first of all, I think one of the most important things that's happening right now, we've been watching it for years now, the de-dollarization of the global economy, but this is an accelerant. This is accelerating this process because of those ridiculous words, rules-based order. That's translated for me as we can steal your money when we want. Go ahead in New Delhi.
Correct. Actually, in the BRICS has for several years now, been developing trade in national currencies. And the president of the BRICS actually said some years ago that we need to move away from the hegemony of the dollar. Now, obviously, we cannot do a complete de-dollarization right away, but one has to have new reserve currencies, you know, the yuan, et cetera, already in the basket of reserve currencies regulated by the IMF. And this will accelerate, but ultimately the market is the test of this whole process of getting alternate currencies. Though at the moment, the dollar and the euro do dominate, but this kind of bilateral trade, like India and Russia are developing with local currencies, or China and Russia, et cetera. So there will be, I wouldn't call it at the moment de-dollarization, but the alternate currencies are definitely going to come up to reduce the risks that the dollar is imposing on the world and this dollar hegemony.
You know, Jyoti, it's very interesting what's happening here. The whole strategy is to isolate Russia, and I would say a strong message to China. That's a message that's coming out here. But what they've done is they have isolated themselves, okay? The world it wants to have less and less to do with them because they're unreliable, unpredictable, and will use illegal means to get what they want. I mean, this is an amazing turn of events. This is a paradigm shift. You and I have talked about this before, but this is an inflecting point where people are going to say, we're not afraid of the West anymore. Go ahead.
Well, increasingly, people are seeing that they don't have to be afraid of the West so long as they learn how to stand together. And what the Russia-China partnership is showing is the strength of the rest of the world when it stands together. And that bloc is increasingly growing confident as well as economically powerful, and that's going to make all the difference. And as you say, create this kind of paradigm shift. You know, there have been all kinds of other lessons being taught. You know, you said yourself, Peter, about this kind of institutionalized theft. They call it sanctions. Under the power of sanctions that they unilaterally impose, they allow themselves to tear up any treaty, any negotiation, any contract, that steal any wealth that they can get their hands on from any country that they deem to be, you know, an enemy that's being sanctioned. So there's a lot of things for people to think about in what's going on. And as the professor was saying, with this increasing ability to trade bilaterally in local currencies, you know, the mechanisms for shifting the way the world operates financially is really accelerating now.
You know, let's go back to our guest in Beijing. What, obviously, you don't speak for the Chinese government, but given how China has been observing how this sanction regime against Russia has worked, what lessons are they drawing? Is it BRICS the answer, other multilateral organizations? Because the West is just not a reliable partner. Go ahead, in Beijing.
Well, yeah, yes. I mean, at this point, I mean, China looks at the situation as being, in essence, created by the West. They see the same tactics used against Russia as are being used against China, and that is an isolationist policy where they, the U.S. is using proxies, whether it's Ukraine or Taiwan or Xinjiang, in order to kind of create a situation where they can claim that it is, in fact, not their aggression. Pushing NATO, violating promises that were made to Russia and the same to China, but simply using these as an excuse to try to win a PR war. But the problem is there's no long-term strategy. I mean, 30% of the world's energy is from Russia. I mean, a good percentage of the world's manufacturing is from China. Markets are in China. Nuclear weapons are in Russia. And this kind of ill-fated idea that was started by Donald Trump, that the U.S. can return to greatness by simply diminishing any potential adversary, is absolutely wrong.
You know, if I could stay with you here, obviously, you know, the West is testing China's resolve here because there's been obviously China has been criticized by the West for not condemning Russia here. How far will that go, when you think? Because as we pointed out on this program, we had the BRICS conclave. I mean, Russia isn't isolated. Is that something that, you know, the Chinese are realizing that, you know, the West sanctions are not as effective as they want to be? Actually, I have to go to a quick, I'm going to let you answer, but we're going to go to a quick break. And after that quick break, we'll continue our discussion on Russia and the Global South. Stay with RT. Sanctions on Russia are distorting and damaging the global economy. Consumers all over the world are experiencing higher prices and shortages. At the same time, most of the global South has little interest in the West campaign against Russia, and in the long run may benefit from a world economy in transition.
Counter the Russian state control narrative.
Als Teil der Sanktionen gegen Russland gehen die westlichen Länder gegen russische Auslandssender vor.
Mais écoutez monsieur, c'est pas à vous de décider de qui est journaliste ou pas dans ce pays, on est en France quoi, c'est pas possible.
We will ban in the European Union the Kremlin's media machine. The state-owned Russia Today and Sputnik.
RT, Sputnik, even our video agency, roughly all banned on YouTube.
Et merci à vous tous pour votre fidélité et votre soutien.
Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing Russia in the Global South. Let's go back to Beijing. I know it's really quite interesting. I've been watching ever, particularly since Putin's speech in 2007 in Munich about European security. And there's always been that message, but we have to make sure the Russians and the Chinese don't get together. But everything they do makes a strategic alliance between Russia and China all that more firm. And I think a good part of the Global South sees that as being real. And it attracts people to that because these are two irresponsible players on the global stage, which, of course, is the complete opposite of what you're going to hear in Western media 24/7. Go ahead, in Beijing.
Well, I mean, from Beijing's point of view, they would not have wanted the the inaction in Ukraine. But they understand that Russia was pushed to this by NATO, U.S. and Europe. So that's why they continue to remain neutral. In terms of the rest of the world, the Global South, this stands. I mean, what they see here is, once more, colonial aggression, this idea that you can remain on top by gunboat diplomacy. And they're turned off by it. They've already been through that mill, and they have no intention to return.
Okay, let's go back to New Delhi. Talking about neocolonialism, in the beginning stages of Russia's military operation, there was an enormous amount of pressure put on India to follow the line, and it didn't work whatsoever. It was just like a flat letter. It didn't go anywhere, and it had that tinge of neocolonialism that, get in line. Well, India has its own national security interests, its own economic interests. It's one of the countries of the future. I would say the EU is something growing in the past now. So, I mean, India stood up. I mean, again, is this a turning point or is this a culmination of points that we see India on the international stage? Go ahead.
Well, number one, you see, India's had such a long, stable, non-conflictual and mutually beneficial relationship with Russia that they were not going to forsake this for a very new kind of promotion that the EU and the US were doing. And there were a string of, all their Secretary of Defense and Trade coming in and actually putting a lot of pressure on India, because for them, it's the jewel in the crown. If India goes, a lot of the Global South kind of could become, could be kind of challenged. So it was very important for them. But India has resisted this pressure, and there's consensus behind this pressure. Every political party, right, left, center, the intellectuals, the institutions have backed this consensus. They support this consensus that they're very clear that Russia was trapped in this war, that Russia has been good for India. India depends on Russian energy and defense supplies in a very big way. So that was number one. But now, many of the American defense and other specialists are warning India that, look, if China attacks you, where will you run to? Which is, again, putting a new threat and putting all kinds of... And India has replied saying, look, we have enough information and we have bilateral talks going on.
Yep.
So don't put that kind of pressure. So that's what's happening currently.
I'm really glad you brought that up. Let me go to Jyoti here. They always play that card, play off country after another country. And that's what they tried to do with Russia and China. And now we have India and China. And, India's foreign policy is not driven by the White House as much as they would like that here. I find that to be a very primitive form of great power politics. Go ahead.
Absolutely. And of course, while the countries of the what you call the Global South, the developing countries, the oppressed countries, have a long history of interference, domination, control, looting by the West, by the imperialists, they also have a long history of trusting Russia and China. Why? Russia was formerly the Soviet Union. Both the Soviet Union and China gave huge, huge support to the national liberation struggles all over the world in the colonial era. They have always treated those countries, the free countries that came out of that time, with respect, with dignity. They've traded in terms of equality and mutually beneficial development. It's a completely different relationship. It has always been reliable and stable. And when Russia or China give their word to another country, they stick to it. They respect them and they are respected in return. So we can really see the basis for The kind of falling apart of the West plan to just pressurize everybody into doing as they're told.
Yes, let's go back to Beijing. I find it really interesting the Western narrative, and particularly under the Biden administration, is democracy versus autocracy. Okay, but what they show themselves to be more mostly ideological in the way they approach the world. This neoliberal ideology, and it deems the world good versus evil and all that. And as Jyoti was just saying there, that's not how the global South looks at it. They look at it mutually beneficial and without any kind of domination. And this is what neoliberalism constantly does. You know, when I look at China, I don't see it as being an ideological place. I see it as being very pragmatic. Go ahead, in Beijing.
Well, what you're talking about is American exceptionalism, this idea that we can do bad things in America, and it doesn't matter because we're trying to do a greater good. And quite frankly, I think people are tired of that. People, especially countries that have suffered under not only European colonialism, but the kind of colonialism that the U.S. was practicing, and is still practicing, this kind of gumbo diplomacy, this idea that you can force other nations to adopt the ideas, principles, and ideologies and methods and means by which you exist, despite the fact that in the United States, to say, we see quite clearly it's a nation divided, a nation that is not able to come together, that is, in some respects, on the verge of some sort of deep divide. So, I mean, it's hard to lead when you cannot do. And right now, the United States cannot lead by example because they do not have the moral certitude or a basis to tell other countries what to do based on what's happening in their own.
Well, let's go back to the professor in New Delhi. I'm sure you're aware of the literature, A World Beyond the West, and I follow it very, very carefully. Well, the development of financial institutions, trading agreements, and whatnot. And I think that this assault on Russia by the West is only going to accelerate that. And I think the Global South has a lot more confidence now, because as we've pointed out on this program, the fear level is lowering. They're not as afraid as they used to be. As a matter of fact, they can be actually quite indifferent. I think it was Zelensky of Ukraine. He had a Zoom talk with the African leaders. Only 4 out of 53 showed up. And I'm sure there was a lot of pressure on the West for African leaders to show up, but they still didn't go. The fear is fading. Go ahead, in New Delhi.
Yeah, so there are just three quick points I want to go. Since you started with the African Union, it was not just four that showed up. The fact is that Macky Sall, the president of the African Union, actually said a few days before that it was the West to blame for this food crisis and sanctions to blame. And he said Moscow is trying to open supply lines. That's one point. Second, about the confidence of the Global South. Now, the BRICS countries together, their GDP is actually, in terms of purchasing power parity, is more than that of the G7. So, they don't need to hang on to the G7, except if they give them, respect and, as Jyoti said. And number three, I want to raise one new point, and that is tomorrow, when the NATO strategic document comes out, you will see that the entire focus is going to shift to China, because that's whom they really want to get.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's going to fail, quite frankly, and because they think they have already decimated Russia, which is completely false. Thank you.
Oh, Jyoti, continue on with that. I think that's exactly how I see this here, is try to collapse the Russian economy and then, let Russia lick its wounds, and then the real target is China. That's exactly how I have seen it here. But, Jyoti, one of the things, you and I have talked before, I just think the West is just going to double down. They never learn anything. They're just so ideologically obsessed. They cannot learn from their mistakes. They just print more money, immiserate their own people, because they can't admit they make mistakes. They can't change course.
Well, it's like the leopard that can't change its spots, isn't it? Imperialism is imperialism is imperialism. Monopoly capital seeks profit and domination and control. It doesn't do respect. It doesn't do human rights and democracy. Those are words. It does domination and control. And ultimately, its financial power has been backed up by its military power. But of course, what we're seeing with the war in Ukraine is the limits of both of those powers being very clearly highlighted, that another force is emerging capable of standing up to the imperialists. And of course, their only answer to that is to double down and try and, you know, escalate and escalate and escalate. And, you know, failing in the war in Russia will make them more war hungry. That's the crazy thing about the system and its logic. But what they are doing in the process is empowering, is strengthening the resolve of all those countries that get in its way. It tried to isolate so many countries that all those isolated went, oh, hang on a minute, if we get together, we're the majority. You know, as you said earlier, they're actually end up isolating themselves from the real economy of the world. And Russia has shown to the developing countries of the world that another path is possible if you've had enough of submitting to this imperialist diktat.
Yes, let's go back to Beijing 1 minute here. I think that NATO in Europe has patently failed, but that's not stopping them from starting a NATO in the Pacific here. Again, doubling down on failure. 1 minute left to you, my friend in Beijing.
Yeah, I mean, China is obviously concerned about this. I mean, taking the same tactics that have been used in Europe against Russia and then using them against China, you know, obviously has parallels. But, you know, right now people have to understand that Russia is in a survival mode. It's been attacked. Its security has been compromised. It feels it has been lied to. And China feels increasingly the same way when the U.S. starts hedging on, what is the one China policy, when they stop talking about China and they start talking about the PRC. It's a clear indication that they are attempting the same tactics on a different area.
Okay, we end on a very interesting point there. We're going to all be watching this here. I want to thank my guests in Bristol, New Delhi, and in Beijing. I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, crosstalk rules.